Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon, episode 90 for October 8th, 2009, Dojo Toolkit.
This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Floss. I don't look a lot like Leo. This is Alex Lindsay. I'm sitting in for Leo while he's in Dubai. And, of course, I'm here with the usual suspects, John O'Bacon and Randall Schwartz. And who do we have on today, Randall?
Well, it's actually a pretty good show. It's going to be a fun show. We have on, on past shows, we've had various JavaScript toolkits for doing things. I think just recently we had John Resig talking about jQuery. We've had the guys on from UE, the UE toolkit, and so on. And this is another toolkit, but I think it's a little bit different in some ways. So we'll have to let our guest explain today. Our guest is, in fact, Peter Higgins. I believe he's the project lead for the Dojo toolkit, which is, again, has low-level libraries, goes all the way up to really high-level widgets and stuff like that. It's in use in quite a few places, from what I understand. So we should bring him on.
Great.
So, Peter, where are we talking to you from?
I'm in Manhattan at the moment, for whatever reason.
That would be like the Manhattan, like New York City kind of place, right?
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. And we didn't talk to Jono in the opening.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. Just ignoring me again. Next time, can we talk about feelings?
So we spoke briefly about what Dojo Toolkit is in the opening, but can you give us the high-level view of what Dojo Toolkit's all about?
It's just JavaScript. It's just a collection of common JavaScript utilities that anything can apply to, really. Unified.
Well, that's really generic.
But no, it is. It's like, okay, yeah, 10 seconds, go. It is just a bunch of JavaScript that does about anything. It's, for the browser, for the server side, runs in a number of different environments, and it's all entirely BSD and AFL licensed, so it's just free, and it's free to use, and that's it. Open source.
What was the inspiration behind the project?
Thanks for having me, guys. the inspiration behind the project, I actually had little to do with the project. It's now been five and a half years that it's been going on, and I've been the project lead for two. My predecessor as the project lead was Alex Russell, now of Google Chrome Frame fame. There it is. Sorry. So he was the kind of mastermind initially behind it, and a number of other initial people. But the motivation was unified HTML. There's so much stuff that's difficult to do in this landscape that might as well just make a set of tools that work across the board. And that was the goal, and it still is. So
part of this is driven by the fact that although there is sort of a generic interface from JavaScript to the browser, the DOM and everything, it varies from one browser to another. Is that correct?
Oh, horribly, yes.
And so the point of Dojo Toolkit is like these other toolkits, like, say, jQuery and UE, that sort of isolates you from that.
Yeah. And each has a different philosophy on how things work. Comparatively, the UE toolkit is probably the closest to the Dojo philosophy.
And why do you say that?
Just in, for instance, a prototype is, one of the more popular ones as well. And they extend native prototypes. So your array methods get decorated on the native array prototype in JavaScript or whatever. So it turns into kind of a interoperability nightmare at some point when you start combining that library with other libraries that are expecting certain methods not to be on the array, or vice versa. So we, Dojo has this very, very defensive take on things and how we implement straight functional function calls to do these things. For instance, you know, for each, right? Like array for each didn't exist in JavaScript in any language or any browser up until like JavaScript 1.7, which is Safari now has it, and Firefox 3.5 both have native for eaches on the array. But Prototype already had one. Dojo has a dojo.foreach, which mimics the current implemented version. So we're kind of taking this defensive take and providing the tools that are sane. We're kind of healing the language, I guess, and and just kind of pushing forward and talking to standards bodies and being like, yes, this stuff works, or no, this is horrible. Why did you, you know, why is it like this? Let's work around that. So
let me make sure I followed that. So you don't actually modify the object prototype. You actually, this is all done with function calls separate from that, unlike what prototype does. Okay, yeah. That's good. Yeah. And that's like, I think like jQuery. jQuery also doesn't push in directly into the object class either.
No. No, that's absolutely right. And but jQuery is like a small subset of the Dojo mentality. jQuery kind of focuses on DOM operations and common things to do to DOM operations. And while Dojo has all of that in their Dojo query function, which is which actually can be replaced with jQuery's query engine, Sizzle, we use our own called Acme. But the build option is there to use either or. And it's just that aspect of it is just a matter of like finding nodes in a DOM tree quickly. But then there's so much more to JavaScript. Like the DOM stuff for JavaScript is like the bad parts. I guess that's the other 400 pages of Dave Flanagan's book, versus Crockford's The Good Parts. So the good parts are these really cool language features that are there and that we can fix and that we can use that just aren't normalized across all the platforms that implement JavaScript. So that's where Dojo comes in.
Are you seeing the Dojo project as just an exciting sort of think tank and playground in which people can explore doing cool stuff in a browser?
Not the Dojo project specifically. There's one project within the Dojo project. So a little tiny piece of history. The Dojo toolkit, I like doing that, sorry. The Dojo toolkit is built up of a number of different parts. It starts out with Dojo base, which is just a single JavaScript file that provides the CSS selectors and stuff. It's really targeted at the browser. It's very much like jQuery.js in size and scope and everything. And then there's the Dojo core, which is a bunch of officially released and sanctioned plugins, basically, on top of base Dojo. And then there's Digit, which is a UI library built on top of Dojo. And then there's this kind of sandbox place called Dojo X, which is just that's the free-for-all where all of this really, really cool forward-looking kind of implementation stuff happens. And once it meets the stability and the unit testing and documentation standards that the core and base have, then some of that stuff gets moved into Dojo, but otherwise it just sits there as like, hey, that's cool JavaScript, you know? There's
right.
Gotcha. A lot of, yeah.
It sounds like from what you're saying, I mean, I used to be a web developer many moons ago, and I remember that, you know, if you, certainly back then, if you wanted to do anything vaguely more exciting than just punting data backwards and forwards to the browser, and particularly when I started playing with Ajax, you entered into this unbelievable world of torture in trying to get this stuff working with all browsers.
Yeah.
How have you found being able to make sure that, you know, your software works in all of these browsers? Have you found that that's been as much of a headache as I imagine it is?
No. Internet Explorer really is the least common denominator of all these things. So it's getting better. But we still do have to support the lower number Internet Explorer. So that's always been a pain case. But just as a good developer, you kind of learn to avoid certain things with that and with Internet Explorer, and then kind of know your limitation, and then the rest is all smoothed over. Like adding an event listener to something, that's abstracted out into a common call, and those things are all provided by all the libraries. So it's like a library decision basically is philosophical and the API design that if you agree with it or not, and you kind of learn and realize that they've all been abstracted, like they've right. all taken away that pain, at least on the very, very low level. Like you don't ever have to interact directly with the DOM using
Node. So the way it works is that you provide this consistent API, and then you're underneath your API, have you got kind of a library that goes away with each browser and basically does
Black
all the horrible
magic.
Quirks and deals with all the nasty work that we've had to do in the past?
Absolutely.
Yes. That sounds like a world of pain.
Only a world of pain once. You have to write a bunch of unit tests, and you have to discover the problem and trace it down to, you know, right. what is the actual origin. And I mean, half the time you can go to the Mozilla or the Microsoft Development Center and find specifically where they're saying, yes, this is why we're doing it differently, and here's what we're doing differently. And it's just a matter of, you know, a little bit of little feature detection and figuring out what's going on and branch there for it. So
interesting. And do you find that, you've got the cross browser kind of issue to deal with in terms of making sure that it works across the board. Do you find that there's many differences in terms of operating systems? I mean, does Dojo behave very differently in Firefox on Linux as opposed to Firefox on Windows?
No, I mean, some things like when you start doing really, really rich animation stuff, you run into limitations like on Linux, Firefox, but that's really the X11 layer that's really causing you problems there, where it hasn't quite got up to par of the OS X and the XP, the graphics layer there. So you hit flakiness and slowness with their rendering stuff, but really there's nothing that you can abstract out of that.
Gotcha.
Other than, yeah.
But, would you compare Dojo with the other big packages like this? I mean, we've had UE on the show. We've had jQuery on the show. Why would I choose Dojo instead of one of those? What's your sales pitch for it?
It's not really a sales pitch. Like I said, it's we're all abstracting the same stuff away from the developer. And so it comes down to what kind of syntactic sugar you get and mm-hmm. how are the APIs designed? Are they consistently designed? And can I tolerate this and learn this? And once you kind of make a commitment to a toolkit of these types and you learn the APIs and you get really proficient with them, it's really smooth sailing. Like there's literally nothing you can't do. So, and it really just comes down to the philosophical differences. Like I personally don't agree with extending native prototypes mm-hmm. for any reason. It's just an interoperability thing. And for that reason, I don't use prototype or mootools, right? But both of them are very, very well-written libraries, and both of them have very good feature sets that are common across all of the rest of the libraries to a degree, but some have more and some have less, and it's just philosophical. So
what's the size of the core developer team?
It's actually fairly vast. They're the number of committers are in the 50s. Okay. The number of active committers, like I am the project lead overseeing the three, the Dojo X, Digit, and Dojo Core. And then there are probably 20 core committers that really manage their little sections. Jerry Jerkowitz on the Dojo Data APIs, and everything involving Dojo Data kind of filters through him. Bill Keese is an IBM developer, and he's in charge of the Digit, the UI, the accessibility, and kind of filters all through him. And then beyond that, it goes into contributors and, you know, open source patches and that standard stuff. So
how do you coordinate the teams? Is there a tool tracking system, bug tracking system?
We use Track, standard open source tool set across the board. It's all Subversion now. We have HG and Git mirrors of our trunk that people using that can kind of follow along. But we do all of our primary development in Subversion, and it all ends up in Track one way or the other. We have pretty strict policy about having tickets to reference or fix before we touch the code. So the lineage of the Dojo code is easily traceable, every last bit of it. So completely.
And I heard you said you have tests. Do you require strictly require tests before adding new features?
We do in core and base and digit. They meet these standards. In digit, the standards are accessibility, internationalization, and unit tests and documentation. In base, it's unit tests. It drops, I guess it's the mm-hmm. same, but there's not so much use for accessibility in a non-UI aspect. That's where the digit folks focus. But yes, it's all unit test based. We have a JavaScript unit test framework called Doe that we run. And then we have a Doe robot, which was developed by Mark Hayes of he's an IBM intern, and his and Doug Hayes is a committer on the Digit team, and it's an automated UI test framework. So you can much like Selenium, but it kind of filled in a lot of gaps that we felt were there. So
one of the questions that we're getting from the IRC is Dojo and Zend. You're partnering with Zend, the Zend framework.
Yeah.
And people are kind of curious what kind of things they can expect from all of that. How will it influence Dojo?
Well, it's not so much a partnership. It's a strategic relationship, maybe is what you want to call it. Zend has a lot of, on a foundation level, they have a lot of the same principles as we do, where it's, create this utility set and just allow people to build from these tools whatever they want to build. Our licensing was right on par with Zend, and I worked with Matthew O'Finney to make the integration as seamless as possible. And it turned out that a lot of the design styles were right on par with one another. So it was a very good fit. And you can, anything that you can use in Dojo, there is typically a way to do it in Zend in pure PHP or whatever, and just have it generate the script for you. So trying to make that as clean. Like, I'm very opposed to other server-side languages generating my JavaScript. So, and it's coming out rather clean, the code that we're making with the Zend framework. So
that's awesome. So I saw when browsing around the Dojo site, and you mentioned it earlier on, that the code it's an open source project, and the code is pretty very freely licensed. I mean, I believe it's BSD licensed, is that right?
Dual BSD and AFL.
Right. So what was your, without wanting to turn this into a licensing show, because that wouldn't be good for anybody, what was the decision making that went into choosing those licenses?
That decision predates me.
Right.
I believe it was all BSD up until IBM wanted to be able to just freely distribute this. They use it in a lot of their client facing applications and ship Dojo around, and needed to be absolutely 100% sure of the IP purity throughout. So we picked a license and adopted. We wanted to do Apache Software Foundation initially, but that process was taking too long. So we just started our own foundation, got a couple lawyers, and started making people sign contributor license agreements. So
it seems to be happening more and more with open source projects that, licensing has to be, adjusted and tightened up because people want to contribute in different ways. Have you had a lot of companies like IBM and other entities contributing code to Dojo?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of them do it anonymously through companies like SitePen that do client work with Dojo and for Dojo. And then kind of trickles back upstream, but only with like explicit permission and clear, clear lineage. And then other companies just want to get their name on it and be like, hey, I did this and I'm happy to support this. It's important. Licensing is important for businesses that want to get in on and take advantage of this open source stuff, right? Like very important to keep that clear and to trust. Trust is important, and trust is gained and reputation as well. So.
So on the back of that, is the Dojo project, is there a commercial entity behind it? I mean, when I was looking at the site, it seems to be an entirely an open source project, but I see that there's a site, the SitePen Labs, which are talking about Dojo as well. Is there a commercial entity behind it?
No, SitePen is a commercial entity, and it is behind it, but it is not a puppet master in any sense.
Gotcha.
I'm I'm the lead. I did work for SciPen at a point, and now I'm currently employed for Juiced, which is this load runner or, you know, the anyway. But so there's no real driving force behind it. It's who was it? Dion Almer came up with the 100-point open source purity test kind of thing. And it's, you know, claim you're open, that gives you 0 points, and then actually prove that you're open, and then is there someone that owns the code, you know, and you get all these points and up to 100. So Dojo is a 100-point foundation. Actually, the Dojo Foundation explains that a whole lot better, and the Dojo right. Toolkit is just one kind of part of the Dojo Foundation. So,
because Asimov's, when I'd say I didn't really know, I'd heard about the project, I didn't know a lot about it, and I was doing a bit of research in preparation for the show so I could try and sound as least like a meaningless idiot as possible. And I was reading the site, and I have to say, it's a really professionally put together looking project. I mean, the website Definitely. Looks really professional. It just looks, I looked at it and I thought, this has got to be driven by a company. And then when I started clicking around, I couldn't find anything about how you can pay the money. And I was kind of surprised.
There is a donate button somewhere. I don't know what it is, but it's just a PayPal thing. And it actually goes straight to my account. And then I go buy beer with it for the Dojo beers that we have.
That's definitely part of the purity test, right?
Totally, totally.
I don't know
is there free beer involved? Yes, of course there is. So... No, there really is. Like BEA, 2.5 years ago, gave us a ton of hardware for the site and for the infrastructure and for the foundation. SciPen employs a number of the active committers that develop in Dojo X. Whatever, IBM has a number of active people that help out with Digit. So it's kind of, I guess, inadvertent corporate sponsorship, but there's no real motivation from any of the companies other than they're using it. They want it to be good and we want it to be better. And it's, you know, we're all just in it together trying to keep a level playing field and keep it clean and fast and concise.
There's a lot of love in the air right now.
There's a lot of love. There's a lot of love in the dojo, in the community. Yeah. It's JavaScript is an incredibly beautiful language, and the browsers have kind of made it difficult for us to really prove that to people. So Dojo comes in and you can type some code and whatever, and all of those problems go away. So
do you find that there are specific browsers that are more problematic than other ones?
Well, there's one in particular, and I won't name it by name, but it starts with an I and ends in Internet Explorer. So
you're a master of disguise.
Thank you. I was trying to be very, very subtle about my hatred for this one, but it's actually gotten better with the Chrome frame. The idea, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's the Google released a plugin that you can install in Internet Explorer to make it use the Chrome/WebKit rendering engine, JavaScript engine. So it brings it up to, you know, HTML5 standards, and wow, you can use the canvas tag and things that just were never intended in JScript or whatever. So that's
cool.
If you're going to install
something in Internet Explorer that will basically replace the website part of the browser window, why wouldn't you just use a different browser?
It's a lot of discussion. You should have Alex Russell on here. He's actually now comic fame even on the CSS Squirrel site. It's hilarious. I look at it as more of a statement, as more of like, hey, something needs to be done here for Internet Explorer. It's so far behind the times. It's 10 years old. It's the slowest. It's the buggiest. It's got the most quirks. But the enterprise adoption is still very, very high, and nobody can get away from that. Yep. People are starting now as a trend to drop Internet Explorer 6 specifically support, just as they dropped 5 some time ago. 6 is kind of fading its way out, but it still will be with us for a long time. So it's important to keep the tools working in those browsers and keep the APIs all the same. So.
On the other end of the spectrum, what do you find is the best back end?
As far as browsers?
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. The least amount of glue that the Dojo has to apply to actually get things to happen.
WebKit has a lot of great potential. WebKit is beautiful, and as it's growing and spreading through the mobile devices, unfortunately today, I'm sure you're familiar with PPK and his work with Quirks Mode. He just released an article this week about the inconsistencies across WebKit implementations across the different operating systems and browsers, which is unfortunate, but it's more tightly coupled than Internet Explorer ever was. Firefox has always been kind of a nice even playing field. Not too many surprises there that happen. It's getting faster. It's getting better. It's getting different. It had Firebug first. Firebug is amazing tool if you're a web developer and do not know about it. You should. So I would pick WebKit as the as the best generic.
By the way, I call the other browser the Cajun browser. Aye.
Yeah, nice. Awesome.
As Dojo, as browsers get smarter and smarter, will the interface layer, the low end core stuff, is that just going to get thinner and thinner? Do you think it's heading in the direction that it'll simplify the bottom layers of Dojo?
Absolutely, and that's the plan. That's why we went with forward thinking APIs from day one. It's what's broken: document get element by ID. It's broken in these edge cases. So we have an API Dojo by ID, and you pass an ID and you get back a node, just like you would expect from get element by ID, which is a lot longer to type. So you get that back. And once we finally drop support for the browsers that screwed this up, then all of a sudden Dojo by ID is just an alias to document get elements by ID. So it is getting faster. We already have a special build. So the Dojo core or the Dojo base single file is right at around 27K right now. And we have a special build. We have a build system. It runs JavaScript in Rhino through Java that processes the files and munges them and does all this wonderful funky stuff. But one of the things is it has like an ifdef kind of syntax. And we cut out all of the Internet Explorer specific branches for our mobile build, which is mostly WebKit. So when you get rid of that, we get the size of that file down to about 17K. So just providing all of the exact same APIs and all of the exact everything, minus the fact that we have to detect Internet Explorer in some cases. So
can you get Dojo from and all the libraries, can you get them from a CDN, or do I have to host all the files myself?
No, actually, we kind of led that fight there. America Online initially was using an early version of Dojo. I believe they started with 0.2. We've had Dojo on a CDN for probably 4.5 years now. James Burke started all that. We have an cross-domain loader that works with our package system either locally or across the CDNs, across domains. And that's been carried on. And then Google just now, just recently, within the last year, I guess, has it been longer than that? And I've been sleeping. But yes, somewhere recently, Google started a CDN and they released all of the various popular AJAX libraries on it as well. So
good. So you can be. So I don't have to host your files, and I can actually just use it from a URL. That's great.
Totally.
And who might be some of the big users of Dojo Toolkit? I've been to a lot of sites. So okay, that's going to sound like a real stupid statement. I've been to a lot of sites on the net. The ones I've been to. Had Dojo Toolkit.
when I'm floating down the inner tubes, right? But I don't know. Like there's we use it heavily at work. Just about everything SitePen touches, I think, ends up with some kind of fancy Dojo use one way or the other. There is a whole spotlight section on the Dojo website where people kind of admit to this. It ships, I believe, with WebSphere, IBM's WebSphere. It appears in a lot of places. I actually get a little upset sometimes because Dojo shines really, really well behind the internet. Like I've seen some incredibly beautiful apps that will never ever see the light of day, unfortunately, just because they're private firewalled applications that people needed to do this, but it has nothing to do with its size or ability. It's suited to fit anywhere. It just happens to really, really shine behind the firewall.
So you didn't mention any specific sites other than the ones you
Oh, hold on. Well, I'll look. Let me. I just need a refresher.
Any three.
Three.
I'm just looking for some samples.
You know, okay. Well, I mean, SitePen uses it. Like, on their site, they their entire labs thing. Gosh, why can't I think right now? I'm sorry.
Okay,
I will tell you.
I'm reading through Spotlight, Estee Lauder, Leverage.
Oh, right. There you go. And then the Walmart Photo Center uses it. All sorts of random places where people actually needed really, really good, stable, forward-looking, backwards compatible. So the migration path is very easy. We have a very strict regression policy. Mm-hmm.
So Peter, do you get to work? You said you work at Juice. Yep. Do you get to work on Dojo at Juice, or is it entirely a spare time project for you?
Oh no, we're using it on both the server and front end side now in a bunch of different things at Juice. So
that's awesome.
Server side use of JavaScript. What would that be for?
Using a beautiful language without a DOM.
Okay.
JavaScript is a really, really great language, and a lot of people get really, really upset when they think about JavaScript because their interactions with it are based on the DOM abstractions and the things that they've been trying to do in the browsers for all this time. But really, it's a rather elegant, loosely typed language with, you know, it's object oriented and you can have a lot of fun with it. And there's really, it's a self-healing language. So you can fix the things right there in place that you don't like. You know,
it strikes me that part of the reputation that JavaScript has today is still lingering from when people first experienced the internet and they saw a little piece of text scrolling in their scroll bar, in their status bar.
That's totally the truth. And it's really, really hard to beat that rap. But JavaScript is becoming really, really prominent. I mean, it's available on nearly every device that is internet ready just because the ubiquity of it is parallel to the ubiquity of a browser. And as WebKit has kind of taken the lead in that, it's only gotten better. WebKit has a wonderfully fast JavaScript engine, minus the DOM, you know, stuff. But you can still, there's V8 is available as a C library, Rhino in Java. So you can write JavaScript and have access to all the Java APIs and stuff. It's really just nice. So it's one of my favorite scripting languages these days.
And one of the things I like about JavaScript is it's not just an object-oriented language; it's a prototype-based language, which actually has some advantages. Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, we use the typical shim to create like a class-like structure with pure inheritance and multiple inheritance and all sorts of, you know, we kind of shimmed that around the existing prototypical inheritance that exists. Prototype and
that's
tools
part of the
and
toolkit
ext
too?
All do that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yep. It's actually part of base, so it's one of those things that kind of goes, you know, as a default API that you can call, like declare this class from this class and this class and this class, and it has a whole hierarchy chain thing that it goes through, and but a lot of times it's you don't really need that level, and you can just do a plain prototypical, you know, instantiate. It's cool.
Now, what brought you to the project? Because you said you didn't start it. So what brought you to what you're doing now?
It was actually a freak accident. For whatever reason, I was applying for a job somewhere some years ago and wanted to look up. It was kind of a bad joke that I was going to look up. My friend Dustin Mackey, who is a Dojo committer now and been on the project since early on. And I was like, hey, I found your email on Google. What's this Dojo toolkit thing? And then I started playing with it. And I was already at that point as a web developer frustrated with JavaScript and just completely over it. It was a horrible situation. And then I kind of got back into the libraries and started looking. And then at that moment, right around that moment, Dojo switched from the 0.4 line to where it did this kind of sketchy backwards incompatible change to go into the 1.0, where they had like 3.5 years of this development and said, okay, well, this is what we've done. This is what we've done wrong. And this is what works. So let's simplify and go back and do it all again. Here's Dojo 1.0. And I just kind of dove in and started porting a lot of the old code to the new syntax and the new style, and just kind of made a name for myself within the community. And over time, the more vocal I got, the more responsibility they gave me, and then all of a sudden here I am. So
cool. Had you been involved with open source projects before?
Yes, but not in any horribly like official fashion. The CLA was like the big hurdle. It's like, I really have to sign something to contribute. I can't just like jump in and help with the forums and talk to things, talk to people. But I bought into it, I guess is the term. And it's, you know, it's been downhill ever since. So.
Well, Peter, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us about Dojo Toolkit. I'll definitely look into it some more. And like Jono said, yeah, that website is very professional done looking. So thank you for putting the time and effort, whoever actually on your team was doing that. Any last things you want to tell our audience?
Just that we're right at the verge of a new release. The next version of Dojo 1.4 will be out at the end of November. We're going to cut the beta this week for whatever reason. So 1.4 beta, you can play around with it, and then it'll appear on the CDNs. But there's been a lot of awesome. I believe you have scheduled for the Floss thing, usability design talk with. I can't even pronounce his name, but he's the IBM usability design team, and he's in charge he's pushed a lot of really great changes through his teams into Dojo in these last 6 months. A number of data grid and charting kind of really, really good things, and a new digit theme that ironically is dropping, or it's actually providing degradable IE6 support. So you won't get the rounded curves and the gradients or whatever on the new theme, but it's a beautiful, beautiful theme, and they're putting a ton of work into it. And then 2010 is going to be a huge year for Dojo, with further contributions and another strong release coming right after the first of the year. So,
are you looking for more contributors? And so, what area?
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I think you've certainly opened up a lot of eyes to the project that probably had no idea that it even existed. So keep up the great work.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, for sure.
Thanks.
And once again, that's Peter Higgins from Dojo Toolkit.
Very cool. So now people have choices. They have choices of between. I mean, I'm personally probably going to use jQuery for a lot of stuff, because I'm already sort of digging my heels in on that, but. Mm-hmm. You know, had I not seen that first, I probably would be looking more at Dojo. So it's nice that there's so many players in this area that really are helping us along to make it so that the DOM isn't so scary anymore.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a big fan of other people doing the work. So, you know, if you choose jQuery, you choose Dojo, knock yourself out. I'm just going to use whatever you produce, you know.
Very cool. Very cool. So, Alex, I believe you have a piece of audio that I want to have played. Is that nearby?
It is. It is. Hold on. Here we go. Are you ready?
Let me set this up first, though.
All right.
You're about to hear a piece of audio that I had specially commissioned. If you've ever played with Asterisk, and we had Asterisk on, I guess, 2 years ago on the show, you know that there's this very consistent voice that all the voice prompts are in. And if you then called in on a Verizon phone and left a message, or called in on, I believe, AT&T's phone, but like hundreds of different IVR systems, interactive voice response systems, the reason the voice all sounds exactly the same is it's one lady that's doing it. Her name is Allison Smith, and she does all the voices for that. And I was actually chatting with her by email, because I'm going to AstroCon coming up next week, and she did a bit for me for Floss Weekly as an intro. And I thought we ought to play that at least once on the show. I kind of wanted it as a standard opening. But Leo said, no. And it would just get too old real quick. But we'll play it at least this one time, and I'll explain why. Okay. Go ahead and hit that.
The software you are using has been changed. The new software is free Libre open source software. Please make a note of it.
So I want to thank Allison for cutting that up for me. It was it's quite cool. When I got it downloaded, it was like, oh my God, it's the real voice. And it really is talking about Floss Weekly. That's great. So that's Allison Smith. I just her website, by the way, is theivrvoice.com. And so she can be hired to do all sorts of prompts and stuff. But it was great that she did that for the show. I thought it was pretty good. And I actually get to meet her face-to-face next week. And this is I won't be on Floss Weekly next week, as Jono's taking it all on his own responsibility. Johnny, you want to talk about next week's guest?
Sure. So next week we've got a somewhat controversial guest on the show, Roy Shestowitz from the Boycott Novell Project. Boycott Novell is a website that was founded to basically to provide. I think that they refer to it as awareness of the role that Novell plays in the industry, and they generally pump out a load of. What many would describe as FUD about Novell and what they're doing and all the rest of it. It's a project that I've been curious about for a while. I'm not necessarily suggesting that I agree with it, but I've been wanting to get him on the show so he can explain why they're doing it, what the motivations are, and and he's going to be joining us next week on Floss Weekly.
Very good. And the week after that, I'm looking forward to that show. Actually, I'm looking forward to listening to it since, I'll be tied up with my client next. Well, I'll be tied up at AstroCon. That's where I'm going to be. So I won't be actually on the show. But the week after, we've got Bree Prentiss, who is doing MakerBot. That's a 3D printer that's all open source stuff. That'll be
a
great show.
Is that all open source? Is it the same one that we saw when we were in Vancouver?
I believe it is.
It's the little one. $4,000 or $5,000 for the printer?
Yeah, I think so. So he'll be describing that. It's the most popular one. It's all I know. So Bree is going to be on the show talking about that. That'll be fun. Coming up after that, we have just added to this schedule. If you follow my tweets at twitter.com/Merlin with a Y, you saw this announced yesterday. We have Luke Keynes and Andrew Schaefer, who are on the Puppet project. The Puppet is a build system. Essentially, you define how you want your machines configured, especially good if you have like 1,000 machines. They're all mostly the same, but you know, the config files here in this thing and there in the other thing. And it's great for like abstracting that all out. So we've got him coming on. I actually have a personal motivation for that. And then I want to use Puppet for the machines that I'm hosting. So I want to talk with him about how it all works. So
yeah.
It's personal use there. Show. Have you played with Puppet at all, Jono?
I haven't played with it, but I've known Luke Keynes for a while. In fact, I remember him first talking about Puppet about three years ago, I think it was, at the SoCal Linux Expo. And he's kind of became a bit of a big noise in our world, and a lot of people are really interested in Puppet. So I'm really excited to get him on the show and to hear his side of things, and you know, for the Floss Weekly crazies out there to listen to.
Absolutely, and I'm sure Leo will be installing it while we're talking, so that'll be nice. One of those usual things sure. to do. On the short list, we've got Rob Savoy talking about Ganache, the open source Flash version. We also have Danny O'Brien and Jim Killick talking about open rights, essentially the EFF of Europe. And a bunch of people on the short list, again, twit.tv/floss is where you can go to see the list of all the upcoming guests or make a contribution of maybe telling us who to contact for a particular project and stuff. Go there and take a look at the list, and we'll be happy to try to get them on a future show. It's only 150 names on the list, so we're getting a little short. So please, just kidding.
Oh,
just
no.
Kidding.
Plenty, emergency.
Plenty of guests. Yes, that's right. Only 150. We could still do Floss Daily for a year, and we'd still be just fine. So glad it's only weekly, though. And Alex, I want to thank you for helping host in Leo's absence this week.
Thanks. You guys had a lot of control over it today. I jumped in where I could.
Yeah, well, you did a good job. Good job. You read the IRC channel to find questions. That was great.
I'm resourceful.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, thanks, Alex, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And you want to close out the show, Alex?
Yeah, thanks, thanks, Randall, and thanks, Jono, and thanks, everyone, for listening to Floss.